I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
This week, Muslims around the world begin observing Ramadan, a holy month of prayer, fasting, and spiritual rejuvenation. It also arrives as the Israel-Hamas war has entered its sixth month, with little signs of an end in sight.
There were hopes that there was going to be a ceasefire by now, and that has not been the case.
Miriam Berger has been covering the war for The Post. She's based in Jerusalem.
Despite rounds and rounds of negotiations, Hamas and Israel and the various mediators have not yet come to any agreement. And in the meantime, the humanitarian situation in Gaza has just continued to deteriorate even further. Just a lot of rising cases of starvation, of mass civil disorder right now when it comes to, you know, people just being really desperate, trying to access anything that they can food-wise or healthcare-wise. The U.S.'s response has been to begin to do airdrops of food over Gaza, which is just a very, very small amount, and, you know, sort of a drop in the bucket of what's needed. And the latest is a plan to basically build a sort of temporary port to be able to ship in food, though that will also take a while. And, you know, at its height would be able to serve about 2 million meals a day, but that won't be for a while.
At this point, an end to the war seems so far away. But there are already conversations in the U.S. government about the, quote, day after. And that plan is centered on Palestinian Authority security forces currently operating in parts of the West Bank. It's a proposal with plenty of pushback, including among Palestinians. So Miriam and her colleagues went to the West Bank, and they got rare access to see the training of new recruits and what the effort to revitalize this Palestinian security force actually looks like.
There's always this disconnect between what policymakers say and plan for and what's actually happening on the ground. And the U.S. has been key to reforms in the Palestinian security forces over the last two decades. And there have been significant reforms, but there's still a huge gap in providing an effective, respected professional security force that Palestinians themselves trust, and, you know, that would be able to, you know, effectively help govern Palestinians, you know, in the future Palestinian state that American policy says it supports.
From the newsroom of the Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Elahe Izadi. It's Monday, March 11th. Today, Miriam explains the origins of the Palestinian Authority and whether its security forces are really up to the challenge of helping to stabilize a post-war Gaza. Miriam, I think it's worth at this point stepping back and just explaining, if you can explain to me and our listeners, what is the Palestinian Authority? Let's start there. How did it come to be? What's the origin?
So the Palestinian Authority was set up as an interim, you know, sort of semi-autonomous Palestinian government in parts of the West Bank through the Oslo Peace Accords, which were a series of agreements between 1993 and 1995 between Israel and, at the time, Yasser Arafat, who headed the Palestinian Liberation Organization.
Today, the leadership of Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization will sign a declaration of principles on interim Palestinian self-government. It charts a course toward reconciliation between two peoples who have both known the bitterness of exile.
The idea was that it would then be the stepping stone into Palestinian statehood alongside Israel, and this envisioned the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip as this Palestinian state. So the Palestinian Authority was led by the Fatah Party, and the other sort of major political player was and remains Hamas, Fatah's main rival. In the early to mid-2000s, there was the Second Intifada, which was a very bloody period, and really changed the landscape of the West Bank and Gaza in many ways. And then there was a split between, a political split between Gaza and the West Bank and East Jerusalem in 2007. The year before, Hamas had won elections. There was widespread frustration with the Palestinian leadership and corruption amongst Fatah leaders. So Hamas won these elections, which were then sort of rejected by the United States and other Western allies. This created this whole political rift and instability. And then there was this brief civil war where effectively Hamas kicked out the Palestinian Authority and its security forces from the Gaza Strip.
So that leads us to today, and I want to understand more about the status and the state of the Palestinian Authority, because there's so much attention right now in the Gaza Strip, rightly so, and Hamas. But where does the Palestinian Authority, where is it in control of, and what is the political structure? Who is in charge of the Palestinian Authority?
So the Palestinian Authority, is in control of limited parts of the West Bank. And in Gaza before the war, it had sort of limited roles that it would play in Gaza. For example, when you would enter from the Israeli side, you would go through an Israeli checkpoint and then a Palestinian Authority checkpoint and then a Hamas checkpoint. So there were still ways in which the Palestinian Authority was involved. But, you know, there's two different health ministries, the two different everything ministries at this point, in terms of, just, a split in the government and ruling parties. So the PA is led by Mahmoud Abbas, who is the Palestinian president. He's 88 years old, and he was elected in 2006 for a nominally four-year term, but has remained the president since. And there's a lot, he's widely unpopular at this point amongst Palestinians. There's a lot of frustration with his increasing authoritarianism. And people in general see the Palestinian Authority as basically kind of doing the bidding of the Israeli occupation. That in order for the Israeli occupation to continue, it needs to have a Palestinian leadership that helps to keep it going, is one of the main criticisms of it from amongst the populace. And at the center of that is the security forces, who, crack down both on critics of Abbas and as well, crack down on Hamas, but also go after people that, the Israelis want as well.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about the standing of the Palestinian Authority among people in the West Bank right now. What is their reputation? And just lay out that landscape for me.
So the Palestinian Authority is very unpopular. I mean, there's widespread desire amongst Palestinians for freedom, for self-determination, for having sovereignty in a Palestinian state. But at this point, there is very little trust that the Palestinian Authority and the leadership at its helm are the ones who are going to deliver that, or that they're even working towards that. And amongst the myriad difficulties is also the shrinking space Palestinians have in the West Bank, and that the PA then is in control of as Israeli settlements spread throughout much of the areas as well. And so the Palestinian security forces, their reputation has sort of changed over time because there's been some major reforms. Right now, though, there's just a lot of frustration and distrust that they're basically seen as sort of doing the bidding of both, an increasingly authoritarian Palestinian leadership as well as of the Israeli occupation.
Miriam, what does doing the bidding of the Israeli occupation mean in this context?
Through Oslo, the West Bank was divided into areas A, B, and C. Areas A is where the Palestinian Authority is supposed to have full control. Area B is where it's supposed to have most control. And Area C is under Israeli control. This has changed in ways over time in terms of Palestinians having less and less access and control of areas. But when the Israeli military enters Area A or Area B for raids or operations, the Palestinian security forces, they disappear. They are not to engage at all with Israeli forces. And, you know, when there's settler attacks, the Palestinian security forces, they can't do anything to stop that. And when there comes to checkpoints, the Palestinian security forces can't help at checkpoints. So there's really a lot of ways where all the sort of restrictions that Palestinians themselves face are also on the security forces. So one of the main elements of the Oslo, peace accords that is still, still standing is security coordination between Israelis and Palestinians. And while sometimes the Palestinians sort of say that they've can't called off security coordination, it still continues. And it's basically, anywhere from Israeli citizens driving into Palestinian authority-controlled part and those security forces, bringing back them into Israeli territory to Israel coordinating over, those who are Palestinians on its wanted list the Palestinians coordinating over arrests, etc.
Mm-hmm. So if the Palestinian Authority came out of the Oslo Peace Accords, what is right now Israel's relationship with it? And also, where does the United States stand with it?
So Israel's leadership has been, quite openly hostile to the Palestinian Authority. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has flatly rejected any role for the Palestinian Authority in the day after scenarios for Gaza in opposition to what the United States has said it supports. But at the same time, there's no alternative to it. So over time, there's been a real suppression of any alternative, political trends within and political leadership within amongst Palestinians. So, young people are really disincentivized to go into formal politics or to try and join the PA and whatnot, because they see it as sort of, a dead end. And that if they do express themselves, that maybe they'll get arrested by one of the two, security forces. So on the one hand, you have a lot of criticism from the, Israeli government and its leadership. At the same time, though, there is this sort of understanding that if you didn't have the PA, you would have chaos in the West Bank, effectively. And the Israelis also, don't want that to be happening. So it's a bit of a catch-22 right now in terms of them really restricting the authority and what it can do. But at the same time, there is, a tacit understanding amongst many that there is no alternative to it right now.
And then what about the United States?
So the United States has been, one of the key backers when it, both financially and sort of politically for the Palestinian Authority. And it has continued to, support it as well as pushing for reforms over the years. But sort of the calls for sort of some sort of change right now are increasing. And so our reporting has found amongst, those in Washington and amongst some other Western allies, sort of an idea about having a more empowered prime minister, more sort of a government, more of like technocrats, that would be somewhat more of a curb on Abbas's power. Once again, Israel has, flatly said it won't have the PA rule over Gaza in any post-war scenario, and is also opposed to a Palestinian state, which the United States, says this would all be part of. And so, there's a lot of skepticism also over whether Abbas would want to relinquish any power at this point, actually enact some deep reforms. So there's a lot of challenges and skepticism, but these are sort of the ideas that are right now being discussed.
You saying this catch-22, it's interesting. I wonder, in a post-October 7th world, when we're thinking about the day after, quote-unquote, the day after, is the Palestinian Authority, in the view of the United States, despite all of these problems and their issues with their reputation and the documentation around, past corruption and just their, that they're the best only sort of option for the U.S. right now to be backing?
So for the United States, the two-state solution remains the U.S. policy when it comes to Israel and Palestine, and that hasn't changed because of this war. Critics would say that part of the problem has been that there's been a stifling, in part by the U.S., of discussion of alternatives, and as well a stifling of sort of alternative voices and the development of alternative leaderships. Maybe because it would have posed a challenge to, some U.S. policies and, Israeli interests. for the current generation of Palestinians, a lot of the sort of agreements and understandings that were in place before, they don't hold. You know, people really want to have freedom. They want to have their own state. They want to be able to move around to go back to where they're from. And so, you know, there's a lot of frustrations right now that U.S. policy right now isn't exactly addressing.
After the break, what it was like to go to the West Bank and see the training of new Palestinian forces. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Miriam, now that we understand where the Palestinian Authority, the origin of it and its reputation, I want to learn more about how much the U.S. is investing into the training of their security forces and why.
So Washington right now is quiet about the exact details of the plans. You know, in general, the idea would be that they would need to train a whole host of new people, and that, you know, there would in theory be some also people from Gaza who know Gaza, may have been part of the security forces in Gaza before the split, who would be part of the force, inside the territory after, in the day after. The whole details about this, right now, Washington won't publicly talk about. And it leaves a whole lot of questions about sort of the practicalities and, if this would actually work. A lot of people are really, really skeptical that basically kind of augmenting what we had before would fix any of those problems.
Mm. So the idea here being that the Palestinian Authority's security forces would be the security force in the Gaza Strip the day after.
Yes, this is sort of one of the ideas being floated.
I see. So, Miriam, I know that you also recently visited a training facility for these security forces in Jericho, which I also understand that's very rare access that you got. And we can hear in this tape that you sent along these recruits chanting, you know, like you would as you're marching along. They're chanting lines from a Syrian poet. Can you tell me more about what you saw there and who you spoke to?
So this is one about 10 centers, training centers across the West Bank. This is a sort of central training institute, which is the main place that all parts of the security forces may come to for trainings. And it's kind of tucked into the slopes in Jericho, which is a sort of hot and somewhat desert climate. And it's a fairly large facility that's been built through, U.S. and other Western funding. So at the Central Training Institute, you have, what you would have at any of these kinds of places. You have a dining hall. You have places for recruits and trainees to sleep. You have a language center. You have a library. You have all these different, other classrooms and classes going on. And then you have people marching around, doing different kinds of chants and drills. One of the things we saw was how the advanced trainees train for shooting missions without actually having any ammunition that they can shoot. So they have this sort of simulated area that is sort of meant to mimic a Palestinian neighborhood. So there's, some kind of streets and caravans. And so we saw what was supposed to be a kind of mission to arrest two, violators of the law who were hiding out in what was named, in a restaurant. That's sort of what the caravan was just named. But they only had paintball guns, and only some of them had paintball guns. Other people just had sort of like fake decoy guns, effectively. Because this is what, those at the training center told us, Israeli authorities have blocked the entry of new ammunition, which is coming from Jordan. When we contacted Israeli authorities about this, they did not respond. We saw one sort of lesson about how to use some guns, but they weren't able to actually use them themselves. There was just, one on the table. And so some people are sent to Jordan for trainings, and Jordan has been where Palestinians have, over the last 2 years been sent for trainings. But the idea is to be able to have it so that you don't have to spend all that money and time and have Jordanians train the Palestinians, but have the Palestinians train themselves. And, the colonels that we met at this institute, are really proud of what they've developed and built over the years. And they really want to be the ones training the next generation. And that's really hard when you can't even have people practice with live ammunition.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to prepare someone to, be the security force without being able to train properly and have, like you said, like live ammunition to practice with. What are some of the other challenges these trainees face as they're being trained to potentially be the ones to be in charge of the Gaza Strip?
So one of the other central issues right now, just facing the security forces and the Palestinian Authority in general, has been that basically employees are only getting partial salaries. This has been the case for the last 2 years. This is what the spokesperson of the Palestinian Security Services told us. But since October 7th, it's gotten even worse. There's basically this dispute over tax revenue that Israel collects for the Palestinians and then, according to an agreement, is supposed to transfer. But Israel refused to make the transfer because parts of that revenue were sent to Gaza. This basically made it so that the already cash-strapped Palestinian Authority was even more cash-strapped. So, people were getting about like a month and a half of a salary over like a 3 or 4 month period. And this is at a time when the economy in the West Bank is doing so, so bad because also Palestinian workers are not allowed into Israel in order to work, which is a big part of the economy. And also just moving around the West Bank is really difficult because of increased Israeli restrictions. Mm. And so, even amongst the trainees themselves, having to get to Jericho can be quite difficult. I mean, the sort of two main entrances in and out right now, often they have checkpoints there and the wait can be hours long. And so just even moving around, there's this whole degree of uncertainty. And these jobs, despite all the criticism there is of the Palestinian Authority and its security forces within Palestinian society, these are stable jobs in an economy that is unstable, and very much sort of controlled by elements of the Israeli occupation. And so, that was always one of the sort of selling points of these kind of positions. But even just being able to pay them right now is a huge challenge.
Miriam, I'm wondering, just stepping back and thinking about what you saw and who you spoke to, where does that leave you? And what questions do you still have going forward?
So the Palestinian Authority has been quite clear that it does not want to return to Gaza if it's not part of a political agreement in terms of a Palestinian state. And, we heard the sentiment, the colonels and other trainees that we talked to at the institute were very adamant they did not want to, speak politics with us. But there was a shared frustration about, decisions not being done on their own terms. And there's, as one of the main colonels that we spoke to, he sort of said, great, we need to have equipment arrangements, political decisions, logistics, all of this has to be discussed. discussed, and then you can have plans about what to do next. But none of that's being discussed because no one, who's going to call the shots about this, who's going to get to decide is all up in the air. Palestinians are really having very little say in all of this. And I think, you know, that really resonates, despite the difference between, you know, the gaps between the Palestinian public and the authority right now, the sort of feeling that none of this is being done, on the terms of Palestinians and sort of in the interest of Palestinians is quite widespread.
Well, Maryam, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you for having me.
Maryam Berger is based in Jerusalem and has been covering the Israel-Hamas war for The Post. Before we go, here are a couple of other things on our radar. TikTok users flooded the phone lines of congressional offices last week after the app sent pop-up messages urging people to speak against a new bill that could lead to a nationwide ban of TikTok. Some offices even had to temporarily shut off their phones. Lawmakers who back the bill say this is about national security, arguing that TikTok's Chinese parent company, ByteDance, is passing data to China's government. Critics of the bill say it infringes on the freedom of expression of the millions of TikTok users in the U.S. The House could vote on this bill this week, and if it passes both chambers, Biden said he would sign it. And lastly, if you're struggling with a time change because of daylight savings this week and could use a bit of a pickup, check out our new quiz about coffee from our colleagues today. It customizes the perfect coffee drink for you based on your palate. It's super helpful and fun, whether you're a coffee newbie or a coffee snob like me. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Renny Svernovsky, with help from Ariel Plotnick. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Monica Campbell. And thanks to the William J. Clinton Presidential Library and its archives. If you're looking for the latest updates on the big news of the day, you should check out our morning news briefing, The 7. You get the 7 stories you need to know about every weekday morning by 7 a.m. You can listen to it wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Elahe Izadi. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, The Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from The Washington Post wherever you listen.